Part two of Canto 6, Srimad Bhagavatam, Prescribed Duties for Mankind. Continuing from, it was yesterday, huh? Gee, it seems like a long time ago.
Part one, where
we discussed already, for those of you that weren't with us, just a little quick review. Srimad Bhagavatam has 12 cantos. What's that sound? Oh, okay. 12 cantos, and each of the cantos discusses a theme. And in the 6th canto, prescribed duties for mankind is the theme. There are many places in the scripture where dharma is discussed, duties of mankind. The role that the human form has on earth, where we're residing now, has huge impact on all the other species of life. What the human species does impacts all the other species, unlike any other species. And so there's great responsibility as well, along with great facility in the human form of life. And it's, we're obliged to know what the laws of Manu, the laws of mankind are. What's to be done? And what's in violation of what's to be done? What is to be done? What is not to be done? What is duty? What is adharma or neglect of duty? It's discussed in so many places. And the Srimad Bhagavatam makes a very nice distinction between, besides dharma and adharma, makes a distinction between dharma and paradharma. Para means supreme or transcendental. And that is the subject matter of the Bhagavatam. Paradharma. Dharma projita kaitavotra paramo nirmatsaranam satam. The Bhagavatam discusses paradharma and rejects kaitava dharma, or anything less than what the human form of life ultimately is meant to attain. Because when you receive the human form of life, the facility of the human form of life is to achieve God-realization. Full self-realization and full God-realization. Prabhupada explains it very, very nicely. Self-realization and God-realization, they occur simultaneously, like when the sun rises in the morning, you can see the sun and you can see yourself. Very simple. Supposing you have a mirror and it's dark, dead of night. You can't see yourself. As the sun rises, you can see the sun, you can see yourself. Self-realization implies God-realization. Self-realization without God-realization is illusory, or cheating, or pushpa-akash. There's no such thing as flowers in the sky. Or, I forget what the Sanskrit is, horses' eggs. There's horses, and there's eggs. But there's not horses' eggs. And self-realization, similarly, without God-realization, is horses' eggs. It's a misconception of self. A nicer way to say, or softer way to say, is it's incomplete. Because there may be something to do with incomplete self-realization that tells you something, but if you take that something to be who you are, that's incomplete without God realization. Similarly, dharma is to realize the personality of Godhead and to repose oneself in eternal service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are other portions. Supposing someone says, oh, I don't want to do that. That's everybody in the material world. We come to this material world because there's some aversion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We don't want to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We want independent enjoyment from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's why we're here. So if there was only one option, that is reality with a capital R, the absolute truth with a capital absolute truth, there's only one option here. People won't take it. They'll take adharma before they take the absolute truth. So there's dharma, where there's a mix between what I want and elevation. And if it matches, great. And if it doesn't match, see you later. So it's good to engage people in dharmic duty. But the message of the Bhagavatam is prescribed duties for mankind is paradharma. So to explain this paradharma, there's a system of education called compare and contrast. Like you have a small child, and when a small child is really small, everything that they get their hands on goes one place. Sigmund Freud called it something, oral fixation. But as the child gets a little bit, you know, they learn, a little older, they learn shoes go on the feet and hats go on the head. Not shoes go in the feet and hats go in the feet and mommy's ear goes in the mouth and everything goes in the mouth, because so they make distinctions between one thing and another thing. This is for the mouth and that's for the feet and that's for the head. So in teaching dharma, the Bhagavatam teaches the distinction between adharma, dharma, and paradharma. So ultimately we can understand what is paradharma. So I was debating what to cover here, because there's some descriptions of lineages of descendants of daksha, and some of it's just like long lists of things and then events in people's lives. So I didn't know if I should go there, but I'm going to for the reason just mentioned. For the reason just mentioned is the Bhagavatam is teaching us the distinction, and these messages are help us to understand the distinction. Why paradharma? What is it and why? So that we can take shelter there. Yesterday, seems like last week, but yesterday we discussed chapters 4 and 5 of Canto 6. Daksha curses Narada. Remember? It was so long ago, but Daksha curses Narada. Daksha, we talked about Daksha part 1 from the 4th canto and Daksha part 2, the son of the Prachetas and the daughter of Pramlocha Apsara, given to them by Soma, the moon god, he was very pleased by their taking his instruction. And so with this qualified wife, they produced the qualified son, Daksha. And Daksha's expert, that's the meaning of his name. He was very expert in fruitive activities. And for the purpose of creating Praja, because he's Prajapati Daksha, he began, and then he wasn't satisfied with how that was going, and so he went to perform austerities in the hills, Vindhya hills, and he chanted the Hamsa Guhya prayers, and Lord Vishnu came and gave him a benediction that he would have a very, very qualified wife with whom he would produce very, very qualified children. And sure enough, they were so qualified, the Hariyashvas and Savalashvas, that they became perfected, pure devotees of the Lord. They were very qualified. And Daksha was very unhappy that because he was fixed in ideas, the idea of fruitive activities have to be done in order to purify oneself and become elevated, ready to take shelter of the higher truth. So he cursed Prajapati. Prajapati Daksha cursed Narada. That's where we ended. Remember that? That was the end of chapter 5. So chapter 6 describes that the next set of offspring that Daksha and his wife produced were daughters. 60 daughters. And Narada didn't come knocking on their door to join his bhakti program. Instead, Daksha entrusted them as wives for very qualified personalities. I'll just mention how the 60 were. The wife's name was Ashikni. So the daughters were given in charity for the purpose of increasing good population. 10 daughters were given in marriage to Dharmaraj. We're going to hear a little bit about Dharmaraj or Yamaraj coming up. 13 daughters were given to Kashyapa Muni. And 27 were given to the moon god Chandra. In this way, 50 daughters were given in marriage. And the other 10 daughters, somehow Kashyapa received another 4. And then 2 each to Bhuta Angira Muni and Krishrava Muni. So the 60 daughters, the this is a similar thing as described going back in the third canto, because this is a procedure that was followed. When the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, her name was most prominent of the three, Devahuti. Devahuti was entrusted in the care of who? Kardama Muni. And Kardama Muni and Devahuti, after years and years of austerities and purifying themselves, they produced 9 daughters, then Lord Kapila Dev. So the 9 daughters were given in charity similarly to different sages, because this is very, very early in the dawn of creation. There just weren't, there weren't options. So the 10 sons of Brahma, one of whom was Narada, who didn't get married, there were 9 sons, so they each had a wife. And with them, children were produced for the purpose of creating good praja to fill up the universe that Brahma just created. And to establish, as sons of, daughters of Swayambhuva Manu and sons of Brahma, they were to establish the principles of Dharma, the duties for mankind. That was during that era of Swayambhuva Manu. So now we're a little further down the line in the genealogy. And I'm going to skip, except for the last portion, something that's a little more familiar to us, is of those 60 daughters, one of them, well, two of them were Diti and Aditi. So the sons of Diti, that's explained towards the end of this canto, and here the sons of Aditi are mentioned. So that's where we're going to begin. So Aditi is one of the 60 daughters of Daksha and Ashiki, something like that. Now please hear, as I describe the descendants of Aditi in chronological order, in this dynasty, the Supreme Personality of Godhead descended. What was his name? Vamana, or Upendra. In this dynasty, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, descended by his plenary expansion. The names of the sons of Aditi are as follows. Quite a host of great personalities. Vivasvan, Sun God. Aryama. Aryama is the one who took the place of Yamaraj. When Yamaraj was cursed, Aryama, one of his brothers, took that position. Actually, no, it was his uncle. Well, Yamaraj was gone. Pusha, Trashta, Sarita, Bhaga, Dhata, Vidhata, Varuna, Mitra, Shatru, and Urukrama. So just some of these I'm going to discuss a little bit more. So Vivaswan was one of the sons of Aditi, and he had three wives. The first of those three wives was, anybody know? Sangya. Sangya. So there's a nice story. When you go to Vrindavan, you'll hear this from Dinabandhu if you are very fortunate. Sangya was given in marriage to Vivaswan. When she came before Vivaswan, he's so effulgent, so bright, she squinted her eyes. She couldn't see, didn't have sunglasses or anything. And Vivaswan was upset. He was a little offended and said, you know, what kind of wife are you going to be? You can't even look at me. I curse you that the first son that's born of you will be the Lord of Death. Yamaraj. And she was pleading with him, no. I meant no offense. You're so effulgent. Please forgive me. There was no intended offense at all. Please forgive me. So he said, very well. Then you'll also have a daughter. And your daughter will, anyone who comes in contact with your daughter will be freed from the influence of Yamaraj. And Yama and Yami. And Yami or Yamuna. So she has many such names. So those are the three wives, and the descendant of Sangya is Yamaraj, pictured in different ways here, and Yamuna. And also of Sangya was Shraddha Deva. And Shraddha Deva later became Vaivasvata Manu. Vaivasvata Manu is the post, because the son of Vivaswan is Vaivasvata, and he became the seventh Manu. But his name, Vaivasvata Manu's name, is Shraddha Deva, the daughter, or the son of Sangya and Vivaswan. Then, this is a little complicated. Vaivasvata Manu wished to have sons. One of the most well-known sons of Vaibhasvatamanu is Ikshvaku, right? Just as described in Bhagavad Gita. So, before Ikshvaku was born, there were no sons, so he engaged the priest of the demigods, Vishishta, one of the Purohit priests of the demigods, to perform a yajna so he could have a son. And as you see from the illustration, much to Vishishta's surprise, instead of a son, a daughter or a girl appeared. And Vishishta did some special other yajna and mantras, and she became a man. He pronounced one of the mantras wrong or something, so had a daughter instead of a son. But then some other mantras, she became a son. But then, as Sudyumna was traveling one day, he went near Mount Sukumara, in the Sukumara forest near Mount Sumeru, and there were associates of Lord Shiva. And in the association of Lord Shiva, only women are permitted, so he again became a woman. So that was a problem, because his father needed a son. So she now underwent some austerities, and Lord Shiva permitted that she could become a man 1 month and a woman 1 month, and a man 1 month and a woman 1 month, and a man 1 month and a woman 1 month. So while she was, or he was, a man for 1 month, he went back to his kingdom, got married, then took a leave of absence for a month and became a woman, then went back and had 3 children. He got tired of that business, so he just went to the forest and accepted Vanaprastha life. So after Sudyumna accepted the order of Vanaprastha and went to the forest, still Vaibhasvatamanu wanted a son. This wasn't working out very well. So he worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He didn't just have a Purohit do some yajna for him. He went to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then he had 10 sons, and Ikshvaku was one, and King Nriga was another. I'm just narrating this for this compare and contrast purpose. So one of those 10 sons mentioned here was Prishraddha. And Prishraddha was given the service by his father, Vaibhasvatamanu, to protect the cows at night. Normally that's a krishi goraksha vanicham vaishya karma swapapajam. That's a duty of vaishyas, to do agriculture work and to protect the cows. Goraksha. Krishi goraksha. Produce grains and protect the cows. But there was a lion in the area, and so the vaishyas were not equipped to deal with the lion, so Vaibhasvatamanu sent one of his sons to protect the cows at night from this lion. So one night, in the dead of night, there weren't street lamps and you couldn't even hold up your cell phone and look around at night, because this didn't have that technology. So it was dark, and the tiger came, and the tiger attacked a cow, and the cow cried very loudly, and Prishraddha wasn't asleep, but it was dark, so he ran, and then the tiger fled with the cow, and so he was chasing, and he caught up to them, and he thought it was the tiger, but instead with his sword he killed the cow. And he felt terrible, and the tiger ran away. So in the morning, Vishishta cursed him, "You've killed a cow?" Because of this, his spiritual master cursed him to take birth as a Shudra. So what did Prishraddha do? he didn't complain and, why, wait a minute, I was trying to protect the cow and it was dead of night, I couldn't see. And he just accepted, this is the plan of the Supreme Lord. I'll just worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because this is still very early in Satya Yuga, he performed a practice of meditation, but he fixed his mind completely upon the Personality of Godhead. And the description said that voluntarily when he entered into the fire where he was giving up his life, but he went back to Godhead. He didn't become a demon. So we'll go back to the beginning part of the sixth canto, because we didn't go into this elaborately yesterday. I'll just mention, the sixth canto amazingly comes after the fifth canto. It's really fascinating. And the end of the fifth canto is one of the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam, which is sthanam. The structure of the universe. Shukadeva Goswami describes Vedic cosmology, how the universe is set up, where the planets are, the names of the planets, how big they are, their orbit, all kinds of numerical, empirical things about the structure of the universe. And after he finishes the heavenly, then the middle, then the lower hellish planets, that's where it ends. End of the fifth canto. And so the sixth canto begins with Maharaj Parikshit, that's so much suffering. Those hellish planets are so awful. What can be done, Shukadeva Goswami, to prevent persons from having to experience that reaction to their sins and such hellish suffering? That's the question. And the answer that's given makes up three chapters of that canto. It starts by saying karmakanda rituals have a process of atonement. If you're doing your dharma, but you make some mistake, intentional or unintentional, there's atonement processes for those mistakes, and that relieves you of the reaction. Maharaj Parikshit says, that's not sufficient, because it may relieve one of the reaction, like we just discussed Daksha Part 1. He was relieved of the reaction of offending Lord Shiva because he offered his apology to Lord Shiva, and he was relieved by forgiveness of Lord Shiva. So the reaction was gone, but the tendency was still there. Recall that? So prayaschitta, the process of atonement along with dharma imperfectly performed, is not sufficient. That's what the Bhagavatam is teaching us. So then Shukadeva Goswami says, very good, you've been listening just right. So knowledge, if you have, in addition to performing your duties nicely, you cultivate knowledge, you'll know what is to be done, what is not to be done, and that knowledge will have the tendency to check that which shouldn't be done. And then knowledge alone isn't enough either, because we may know things shouldn't be done. We do them anyway. We know some things should be done. We don't do them anyway. Knowledge alone isn't enough. Bhakti is the principle that's being presented. Even that bhakti, that's abhas bhakti. A reflection of the genuine thing. A reflection of bhakti. Of pure bhakti. Because bhakti is pure. Even reflection of pure bhakti. And with that, the story of Ajamila is told, with Namabhas as a form of... He wasn't intending even to call Lord Narayan. He was calling his son, Narayan. Oh, Narayan, please help me. And the Vishnu Dutas came and protected him. Because he called the name of Narayan. So even unintentional, what to speak of intentional. So devotional service that's intentional, as this example here of Prarada, Prishada, he took shelter of the personality Godhead, and from that he was relieved of the reaction, of even the curse of Vashishta. He didn't become a Shudra. He went back to Godhead. Therefore, prescribed duties of mankind, taught in the sixth canto Bhagavatam, teaches us, as the whole of the Bhagavatam does, Paradharma is where our real duty lies. Taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here's the third wife of Vivaswan, Chaya Devi, and one of her descendants became the eighth Manu. Vivaswata Manu is Manu number 7. And her son, Savarni Manu, became the eighth Manu. And other descendants of Chaya Devi are Saturn, Tapati. This is important. Tapati married some Varana, who they became the parents of Kuru, of the Kuru dynasty. Very exalted parentage. Another son or sons of Varada, Vadava, the Ashvini Kumaras. We're going to hear some more about, not the Ashvini Kumaras, but Dadichi coming up. But this is an ISKCON painting. That's a very nice painting, isn't it, compared to this one? The Ashvini Kumaras, their situation was, they were royal physicians. They were physicians for the demigods. It's not a demigod post, because demigods are controlling the affairs of the universe. So they weren't counted as demigods, but they were medically attending to the demigod. They were very, very qualified in the field of medicine. But they wanted Brahma Vidya. So they approached Dadichi, who was a great sage on earth, and they requested Dadichi to give them Brahma Vidya. In the picture you see Indra riding on his elephant carrier, Ashvatthama, no, Airavata. And Indra heard that the Ashvini Kumaras wanted this Brahma Vidya, so he told Dadichi, you better not give them Brahma Vidya, and if you do, I'll cut off your head. So the Ashvini Kumaras heard, when they heard that from Dadichi, they said, oh, no problem. We know that the art of, we'll cut off your head, we'll put it in a safe place, we'll give you another head, this horse's head, and through the horse's head, through that mouth, you can speak Brahma Vidya. And then when Indra comes and cuts off your horse's head, we'll put on the other head back. He said, no problem. You see in the lower right-hand corner, that's Dadichi's head. He was very liberal, as you can see. And it comes up, coming up. So sure enough, they received Brahma Vidya. So they became as qualified as the demigods were qualified. But Indra found out, so Indra came and cut off his head. And the two physicians, Ashvini Kumaras, replaced the horse's head with Dadichi's head, and he was all better again. What's the message here? The tricks or the power of a powerful person, the demigods, on the one hand, their devotees, their elevated personalities. On the other hand, they take birth in this mortal realm, or within the cosmic creation, because they also have material desire along with their desire to worship the Supreme Lord. They desire to be controllers. And particularly Indra, he has this thing about people who want to take his position. And so he does very impulsive things that are awful, but he's very powerful, so he can do those awful things in a powerful way. So mixed devotion isn't good enough. That's the message. It brings problems. And Aryama, another one of the sons of Chaya Devi, Aryama, indicated here, he became, when Yamaraj had to, by the curse of Manduka Muni, he had to take birth as a Shudra. Aryama took his post for a while in Yamaraj's realm. Pusha is another one of her sons. It's described about Pusha in the Bhagavatam here in the sixth canto that during the previous Daksha Yajna, when Lord Shiva was being cursed, we're discussing that in the Bhagavatam class at the temple, fourth canto. When Lord Shiva was being cursed, Pusha laughed and showed his teeth smiling. So Lord Shiva removed his teeth with one bash, and for the rest of his life he had to eat just flour, ground grain. That's what the Bhagavatam says. And then the chapter ends, this is chapter 5, ends with the last of the sons of Chaya Devi and Vivaswan, Tushta, had two sons, Sannivesh and Vishwarup. And just to end the chapter, Rachana, the daughter of the Daityas, that's the daughters of Diti, she became the wife of Tvashta. This becomes important, you'll hear later on. She, the husband, the wife of Tvashta, was from Diti's family. So he married a Daitya. But he was very, 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 very qualified Brahmana. And he had two sons, Sannivesha and Vishwarup. The chapter ends, although Vishwarup was the son of the daughter of their eternal enemies of the demons, the demigods accepted him, that's Vishwarup, the demigods accepted Vishwarup as their priest in accordance with the order of Brahma when they were abandoned by their spiritual master Bahaspati, whom they had disrespected. That's how chapter 6 ends. So, Maharaj Parikshit wants to hear all about that. Oh, great sage, why did the spiritual master, the demigods, Brahaspati, reject the demigods, who were his own disciples? What offense did the demigods commit against their spiritual master? Please describe to me this incident. Now, those of you that attend the morning class at the St. Louis Temple, Krishna Balaram Mandir, you can remember what happened when Daksha entered the sacrificial arena that he had set up. Brahma, his father, remained seated, but Lord Shiva also remained seated. He became so angry, right? He viciously insulted Lord Shiva. Here's another response by the same kind of behavior from Brihaspati. There, we do have options when things happen. We can behave like this or we can behave like that, depending upon the modes of nature. We're naturally influenced one way or another way. Brihaspati, influenced by the quality of goodness, behaved very differently than Daksha. So Shukadeva Goswami describes, in the heavenly planets, Indra was having a big festival, an Indra Yajna, in honor of himself. If Nanda Maharaj isn't going to have a big festival in honor of me, then I'll have one in honor of myself. So he was having a big Indra Puja, and as you see, Apsaras and Kinnaras and Gandharvas flying around, and the demigods, and everyone was having a grand time. And into the assembly came Brihaspati. And when Brihaspati entered the assembly, headed by Indra, everyone was so full of themselves, they didn't even acknowledge the presence of Brihaspati. So what did Brihaspati do? He just turned around and walked away. He just disappeared. This is a characteristic of a Brahmana. Prabhupada speaks about this in relation to different historical events with Brahmanas. If their advice is neglected, then they don't stay because they're detached. They're there to render some service, and if there's no service, then they can go somewhere else where there's some service. So Brihaspati left. Meanwhile, the party was going on grand style. This is Brihaspati walking from the festival. And at the end of the evening, Sachi, the wife of Indra, let him know what happened, because did you notice what happened? The festival was going on and Brihaspati came in and you just ignored him. So Brihaspati left. And hearing this from his wife, Indra had an uh-oh experience. Uh-oh. So he sent people in all directions to look for Brihaspati. First he went to his cottage and went to the temple and looked to see where the yajna arena was, and they couldn't find Brihaspati anywhere, high and low, and Indra was in big anxiety. He had offended his spiritual master. He didn't offend verbally, he offended by neglect. That is also an offense. So, you know how rumors go really fast, especially bad news goes really fast. If something good happens, you don't hear about it till later. But something bad happens, you hear about it right away. So, the bad news went all the way to the realm of the Daityas. They heard, Brihaspati's gone. So Sukracharya approached the Daityas and said, fantastic. Do you know what that means? It means the demigods are without protection. Their spiritual strength, their well-being is completely gone now. So get your weapons and do the needful. You can take over, no problem. And so they were very enthusiastic hearing this from Sukracharya, and they grabbed their weapons and did combat with the demigods, and they defeated the demigods easily, took over the whole heavenly realm, especially Indraloka, where he just had finished a party the other day in honor of himself. He lost everything because of offending Brihaspati. So the demigods then went before Lord Brahma and explained everything. He was honest. Indra explained that he had made this offense and asked Brahma's advice what to do. And Brahma first reprimanded him, basically saying, Indra, you've done it again. You've got this problem. You get all filled with yourself. When you get filled with yourself, you do things that are hurtful, and you've offended your spiritual master. But I'll make a recommendation for you. There is a son of Tvashtha. Tvashtha was, we mentioned, one of the sons of Vivasvan, who was his brother, and Chayadevi. And his son is very qualified. He's learned everything from his father. He's expert. So you approach him to become your Purohit, that kind of spiritual master. He'll he's very, very expert in Vedic sacrifices. And he will help you regain your kingdom. Oh, thank you very, very much. Thank you. So Indra, having received this message from Lord Brahma, they went before Vishwarup. Maybe some of you have visited the Brooklyn Temple before. You may recognize this painting from the wall near the door. It's one of the exits. And this personality right here is Vishwarup. Notice that he has more than one head. But it's not Lord Brahma. It's not four heads. He has three heads. Pretty unique. One head or one mouth was used for uttering Vedic mantras. Another mouth was for eating. Another mouth was for having conversation. He didn't eat with the same mouth that he spoke. And so he was a pretty unique personality. The demigods requested Vishwarup, Indra in particular. Said, Brahma has sent us to you because he said that you're so qualified. In the interim, there's no spiritual master to protect the heavenly kingdom, and so we've lost the heavenly kingdom. Please help us. Our service is just to serve Lord Vishnu, but now we have no kingdom to serve him with. So Vishwarupa was hesitant. And he gave three reasons why he was hesitant to take that service. This is in relation to karmakanda, mixed prescribed duties. He said, when one is a spiritual master, one is doing a yajna, it's the duty of those who request the yajna to be performed that they give some dakshin. So it's very easy for one who has that service to think, oh, this is very nice, another yajna, and now I can get some more dakshin, and now I can have some wealth. So that pollutes one's consciousness if one thinks in that way. So one shouldn't think in that way, but he gave a solution. And the solution was, I'll just engage whatever you give in the worship of my deity, not for my own maintenance, and then it'll be very nice. He presented the problem, and he presented the solution. Then another problem was, you are all my superiors. You're vastly my superior. I'm the son of Tvashtha, but you're the son of Aditi. You're my father's father, brother. So you're my superior. How can I be engaged in some service where you're honoring me with respect? Then he gave the solution. He said, I'll do this as a service. Because you're asking me as a service, I'll do it in the mood of service. So then it'll be all right. Then another is, when one takes on the position of being a brahmana, performing yajnas, they accrue so much karma. The karma goes somewhere. So the karma goes in part to the priest that's performing the yajna. And so it's a very dangerous position. I'd rather not have that service. I'd rather be engaged in study and that kind of service. But again, because you've asked me, in the fire of devotional service, reactions are extinguished. And so I can take that service. So Indra was very, glad you can take that service. I couldn't have answered all those three questions. I'm glad you did. And he became their priest. So the first priestly service that he did was he gave to Indra the Narayana Kavacha. And the Narayana Kavacha is printed in the Bhagavatam, if you want to learn it. I know one devotee that learned it, Parampara Prabhu, God brother. in, at that time he was based in Tennessee. He, the month, it, it's, you, just very much like applying tilak. When you put on your tilak, you don't just put on the tilak, but you say a mantra, Om Keshavaya Namaha, Om Narayanaya Namaha, Om Govindaya Namaha, and so on and so forth. So, when you apply your tilak, don't forget to say the mantra. Because the purification is, in part, you're, there's water, and there's clay, there's, ideally, technically, it was originally as mud taken from the sacred river, from the Ganges or the Jamuna, and you're placing the mud from the Ganges or the Jamuna, or Radhakund, or somewhere, sacred. And then with mantra applying, and so it's the mantra that sanctifies and gives protection to these 12 parts of the body. So don't just the part that the forehead part, 12 parts of you, that's ideal, how you can apply tilak and say the mantra. So that's what, essentially what Narayana Kavacha, Kavacha means shield, and the shield of Narayan, he protected his body by touching different parts of his body and saying names of Narayana in a mantra form. And at the end, it was a mantra shield, impenetrable by the weapons of the daityas. So he learned that from Vishwarup, and then he was feeling, yay, let's go back to the battlefield and fight the daityas. And that's another message. Those that gain something from pious activity, dharma that's within the modes of nature, one feels great happiness when that gain is in hand and great sadness when it's lost. It's a setup for sukha and dukkha. The very nature of material elevation, even through pious activities, through proper dharma, it brings sukriti, and that's with that sukriti, it brings the fruits of sukriti, brings elevation. But because it's within the material realm, that item of elevation, after some time, is gone. It may be sooner, maybe later, but it's temporary, it's gone, and then dukkha. It's gone. So that's back and forth with Indra. He's got his kingdom. He lost his kingdom. Now he's got a spiritual master, Vishwarup, who can give him his kingdom back. So he's very enlivened. So the with great happiness, Indra embraces Vishwarup, and they regain the kingdom. The daityas are defeated. Indra's back in his palace again, feeling very happy. But he starts getting a little intoxicated with his happiness, and he realizes, wow, Vishwarup, you're good. You know so many yajnas. You know Soma Yajna? Can you do Soma Yajnas for us? You can produce this wonderful beverage that brings immortality, such longevity of life as we experience on the heavenly planets. Oh yes, I know that one. So he had him engaged in Soma Yajna. Now those of you who know a little bit about yajna performances, amongst the mantras that are chanted, one of the mantras that's chanted is, who is to be the recipient of the benefit of the yajna? Correct? So, along with saying names of the various demigods, he slipped in a few other names. Names from his mother's side, who was the daughter in the line of Diti. She was a daitya. So, no one could follow all the mantras the Brahmana was reciting so fast, but somehow, after some time, it became known that Vishwarupa is making some arrangement for the daityas to get Soma Rasa. So Indra lost it. He had came with his sword in hand and cut off the heads of Vishwarupa. Then he had another experience. trying to be the enjoyer of the fruits of one's pious activities. Remember the math formula? The fruits of pious activities plus an impure heart equals pride. And when one is proud, one can do any awful thing. That was the statement that Narada made. Go to the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, and when he was going to visit Kuvera, so he went to the mountain where the sacred river was flowing down the side of Mount Kailash, and there, lo and behold, in the river were the two sons of Kuvera, completely naked and completely intoxicated and enjoying with naked women, heavenly women. And here comes Narada Muni. The women were very shy and they covered themselves. But the sons of Kuvera, they were so intoxicated, not just with beverage, but they were intoxicated with pride, that they stood naked before Narada, shameless. So Narada considers, he didn't do what Daksha did, and he didn't do what Brihaspati did. He did what Narada does. He considers, what's best for these people? And he considered the situation of pride. They're proud because they've taken birth as the sons of one of the richest people in the whole universe, Kuvera. Treasurer somehow managed to become very rich. I don't know how that happens. But he was very wealthy. And he was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. So, such a great devotee of Lord Shiva that he invited Lord Shiva to come and reside in his garden. That's how what Mount Kailash is. It's the garden mountain by the side of Kuvera's palace. So, obliged by the nice devotion of Kuvera, Lord Shiva made that his residence. So we're on the credential of our father. We're great. And they were intoxicated with pride. So Narada considers one who's proud, they don't care. They can do very hurtful things to others, and they don't care. Very cruel. And specifically he describes animal slaughter. They can do that, and just who cares? Because look, I'm this human form of life and I like the taste. So here I come. Not guided by Dharma, guided by pride and lust and arrogance and harshness. So what Narada considered was, what would be best for these? Because they're too far gone. I can't explain something to them. They're too intoxicated with pride. So best is the cause of that pride is removed for a long time. And he gives the rationale, the analysis, that if someone is pricked by a thorn, then when they see someone else that's pricked by a thorn, they feel empathy for that person who's pricked by a thorn. Oh, it must really hurt. Because I know what it's like, because I've been pricked by a thorn too. So if someone is, similarly, if someone is deprived of opulence, then they'll feel empathy for those who are without opulence, rather than being proud, I have so much opulence, I can do whatever I like with these insignificant people. Just exploit them, take advantage of them, kill them, whatever. Not just people, but other beings. They should be without opulence for some time. And because they like to stand naked, let them stand naked as trees. Trees are naked. They just endure the cold or the heat or the wind or the rain or whatever is happening and stand naked. So let them become trees. But let them become trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, so that at some point in time, Nanda Maharaj's son, Nanda Nandana, can deliver them after they've been freed from their pride. So that's what happened. Balakuvera, Manigriva became trees. Krishna delivered them. set them free, not only from the tree body that they were in, but all of their impurity by contact with Krishna. So with pride can come very cruel action, which is exactly what is pictured here. Indra, tendency to become proud because he's so opulent and so powerful, and somebody doesn't do what he wants or does what he doesn't want, he can lose it quickly. So he cut off the heads of Vishwarup. When this news came, he went to undergo austerities afterwards, but it wasn't sufficient. The father of Vishwarup also knew yagyas. So from one yagya, he created a fiery demon, Vritrasura, that wouldn't want to meet that guy in a dark alley somewhere. Only when, see, here's another detail about karma kanda yagyas. When he was performing the yagya, he pronounced one syllable wrong. It should have been Indrashatraho, which means one who is Indra's enemy. Instead, it was Indrashatro. Just one syllable wrong. And so he created one who would be destroyed by Indra, his enemy. So, imagine you get a Purohit, a nice priest, and you want a nice husband for your daughter. etc. Leave it to your imagination. You're embarking on some project and you want prosperity for the project, and he gets one syllable wrong and everything goes down the drain. Because with the Vedic mantras, aside from whatever is produced is temporary, and it doesn't make the heart pure, and therefore the tendency for pride follows. Whatever is gained is temporary, and it's taken away, and it leads to distress. But everything must be exactly done properly. Otherwise, you don't get any result at all, or you may get the opposite result, like this. Conversely, in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, it's differently stated for the practice of devotional service. Even if there is some discrepancy, because the sound vibrations of those messages composed that are in glorification of the personality of Godhead, even if there's some grammatical mistake or something mistake, the personality of Godhead receives the devotion that's offered to him, and because that devotion is offered to him, he accepts. A nice example of this from Mahabharata. Of course, there's different versions of Mahabharata, but when Krishna leaves the palace, having gone as a messenger to deliver the message of peace to the Kauravas, and he rejects it, Duryodhana. Where did Krishna go? He didn't go to some other place in the palace, he went to Vidura's place. And the wife of Vidura was so happy to receive Krishna in her home. One version said, instead of giving him, she just gave whatever she had, instead of giving bananas, she gave banana peels, and Krishna ate the banana peels. And he was very satisfied, because it was offered with such love. Or another version says she offered him porridge, meaning, like an inferior something. Khichdi. Porridge is the British, just something, like whatever you got, put it together and cook it up, and there you go, Krishna. Wasn't fit for Krishna, like Sudama, who came with his broken pieces of inferior quality rice in a little cloth bag. Unfit for Krishna. We wouldn't go out of our way to get something like that for Krishna, but that's all Sudama had. He was poverty stricken. But Krishna was so satisfied because it was offered with love. Now, if you have something nice, you offer something nice, not just broken pieces of rice. But if it's offered with love and devotion, Krishna accepts. The simplest, as he says in Bhagavad Gita, patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati. Who can't get a leaf? Just live in the world and there's leaves everywhere. And a flower, maybe in desert it's hard to get leaves and flowers, but most other places, that's just the situation. Water, fruit. It's not the simplest thing. And make that as an offering of love to Krishna. He accepts. It's not the perfection of how it's prepared and so forth. This is what Narada says to Vyas about compiling the Bhagavatam. Even if it's irregularly composed, it's accepted by the Paramahansas as the best of all literature, if it's directly glorification of the personality of Godhead. So you don't need to be a super literary person to offer prayers to Krishna. You need to be a sincere person to offer prayers to Krishna. And so here comes this fiery, intense, blazing copper red eyes, fiery beard and long hair and sharp gnashing teeth, and you see how tall he is. He's taller than the building. And a big trident and roaring, and the demigods now are afraid. They're going to lose their kingdom again. And sure enough, when Vishwarupa is set loose, he would pick up trees and smack them. And what to do? The demigods lost their kingdom again. This time they went to Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu, very similar to Lord Brahma, he admonished Indra. Indra, you've done it again, and again, and again. This time you cut off the heads of your priest who's got you your kingdom back. Indra, you gotta get it together. This is very, very offensive. But Vishnu gave him a solution. Because, after all, Indra is a devotee, although a mixed devotee, and he then sent him to Dadichi. He gave him a two-part thing. Go to Dadichi and ask Dadichi for his bones. And he'll give them to you. And you take his bones and give those bones of Vishvakarma, and Vishvakarma will fashion a thunderbolt weapon that will be so powerful, it will destroy Vritrasura. Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. And they went to Dadichi. So, again, remember, Dadichi is so liberal that he had his head removed so he could have another head and speak Brahma Vidya to the Ashwini Kumaras. So when he was approached by Indra, he had a little fun with Indra. He said, Indra, what are you saying? Don't you know that the most dear thing to everybody is their body? Who would just give their body? Please tell me, Indra, what you're asking is quite unreasonable. But Indra's very clever. Indra said, oh, great sage Dadichi, you are so elevated. And everybody knows that an elevated person, they want one thing. They want to serve others with their body, with their mind, with their words. They want to be engaged in service to others. That's a saintly person. and you are such a saintly person, and we're demigods, and we're minus our kingdom, and we need your bones to get our kingdom back, and we can serve others. Oh, Dadichi, please use your body in this service. Lord Vishnu said it. And Dadichi said, I was just having fun with you. See what you would say. Of course you can have my bones. And in mystic trance, he entered into a state of trance and the soul went back to Godhead because he was pure in devotion, not attached to his body. And the body was then, the bones were given to Vishvakarma, who then shaped the special weapon indicated by Lord Vishnu, who could kill Vitrasara. Stay tuned for part 3. The battle between Indra and Vitrasara. It's really the exchange. I'm going to bring my Bhagavatam and read to you what they say to each other. It's really fantastic. So what's our message? Besides, these stories are very interesting. The message is the distinction between paradharma and mixed dharma. Dharma that leads to, yes, it leads to elevation. It leads to achieving things that one may desire, or one may even feel one needs for one's sustenance. But those things are automatically accomplished by pure devotional service. There's a very nice verse, there are many very nice verses in Bhagavad Gita, but Krishna says like that, Ananyaschintayantamam yejana paryupasate tesham nityabhiyuktanam. How does it end?
Yoga
kshema vaham yaham. Do you know the verse? Can you say? Nitya vyuktanam. Nitya means always. Nitya vyuktanam, always engaged. Yukta means engaged. They're always engaged in worshipping me. Ananyas. Anya means other and ananya means no other. Chinta means mind, consciousness. Ananyas chintayanto mam. The minds are always absorbed in me. Yejana paryupasate. Tesham, unto those who are nityabhiyuktanam, always engaged in this way. Yoga kshema vaham yaham. Aham, I personally preserve what they have and carry what they lack. Very nice. So, this is the principle of bhakti. And this is paradharma. One doesn't need the unlimited other methods, like the example of pouring water on every branch of a tree and every limb of the tree and every flower of the tree and every fruit of the tree. It's not necessary. Just pour water on the root of the tree. It's easy to understand, right? You put water on the root of the tree and water goes to all the parts of the tree. So find the root of all existence and place your energy and your effort and your everything there. And the tree of life becomes bountiful. It works like that. That's the teaching of paradharma. There are those that don't have that understanding or don't have that faith, in part because they've got another program going on. That is, they want independent enjoyment from the Supreme. And so there's this bahushakayanantascha. Bhutayovyavasayinam. There's this multi-dimensioned, many-branched intelligence. I do this and this and this and this and this and this and put these things together and I'm going to get happiness. But happiness keeps slipping through your fingers. Never happens. Not that kind of happiness that we feel, there's always something and 10 somethings and 100 somethings and something pricking and something we don't have and something goes wrong and a nice plan and all the next thing you know it's something else altogether and called life. So what to do? take shelter of Krishna. Don't seek happiness there. Seek happiness in the satisfaction of the personality of Godhead. Yes, you should, as Dadichi was told by Indra, you should serve others, but serve others in such a manner that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased. That's our objective. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is to be pleased. So when you have a conflicting situation, wherever that may be, in the workplace, or in the home, or in the marketplace, or in the community, or in something. There's always somethings or ten somethings. Whatever. How do you address those conflicts? What will be pleasing to the Supreme Personality of Godhead? That's what Narada did when he was confronted with these two naked sons of Kuvera. What is to be done that would be most beneficial? He wasn't in a, they're insulting me, I'm going to get them, I'll show them who's powerful. That's what Daksha did, but that's not what Narada Muni did. He thought, what is their best interest? What is the best thing to be done for their welfare and their relationship with the personality of Godhead? Paradharma. Make one's heart pure by the process of purifying the heart. So we spend time in something that's not fruitive. We're not making money or getting ahead in the corporate world or something when we're chanting japa. It's not fruitive. It's purifying. When we're reading the scriptures, it's to guide that cleansed heart so we can act properly in this world. Hearing these descriptions of Srimad Bhagavatam, what's the distinction between worldly dharma and paradharma? And how do we act properly? These narrations in the Bhagavatam illuminate that subject. And if you listen carefully, even you're not such a scholarly person, just hear the message. It carries you. It's that kind of literature. It changes the way that you experience life inside. It changes the inside. So what you see outside is still the same place, but you see it differently. You experience it differently. And therefore, because it's inside, it comes out. You act differently. I think that's one of the reasons that I was asked to speak on this subject. Help change the paradigm or the lens through which we see what are our duties in life. Okay, so end there. Tomorrow is Vitrasura and Indra have a little conference on the battlefield. It's really nice. Any comments or questions? Yeah?
So, two examples which you told today, like Vishwan, like he curses his wife just because she closed her eyes, and then that Brahma cursing because he killed the cow in mistake. So, are these examples of, because these are great personalities, so the example of mixed devotion, like they cannot control their anger or.
Something like that. You know, in circumstances like this, we should be careful. We don't want to offend great personalities. So, Vivaswan is not an ordinary personality. We can say, as we said, he's taken a post in this world which is worldly. It's in a very important worldly service, so he's very qualified, but it's a worldly post, means there's something inside that not, otherwise he'd be in Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. So we don't highlight that, and when we consider the personality, but you're not doing that, you're just, you know, how does this happen? Yes, it can be. It can for such personalities, it's either one of two or perhaps a mix. It's something inside that's coming out, or an indication of the personality of Godhead for some service to be done. So in this case, so that Yamuna can become his daughter, having such a qualified father, leave us on. Like Valmiki, when he saw that the Kalinga birds, one of them being killed by the arrow's hunter, the hunter's arrow, he spoke something very extreme and in an angry tone. Then he was very surprised, right? I this is not me. But then he kept saying it over and over again, and he understood there was some meter to it, and then he understood more deeply what the purpose of the Lord was for that incident, and so forth. Another way of saying the same thing is this one, 9:30 Bhagavad Gita. How did the verse begin? Even if one who is properly situated in devotion engages in the most abominable sudurachar, most abominable activity, that person is to be considered saintly because they're rightly situated. Sadureva samantavya. It's another way of saying the same thing. Be very careful. Is Vivaswan, by character, always engaged in devotional service to the Supreme Lord? Yes. So if there's something that's a behavior that's durachar or sudurachar, then well, how do we regard that? We regard it like Krishna regards it. Something else? Yes?
In one of the pictures, Indra and his wife, Sachi,
yeah?
Indra had like islands all over his body.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, there is. I'll make it short. He violated the wife of a great sage, and the great sage could understand you're too much attracted to indulgence in this way, so your body should be covered with female organs. So he was too embarrassing. So okay, your eye, they'll be covered with eyes instead. So he's pictured like that. Anything else? Okay, you're making it really easy on me. Yeah.
You were saying that Daksha saw Lord Vishnu face to face.
Daksha saw Lord Vishnu face to face.
Like after he was doing some prayers.
Hamsaguya prayers, yeah.
Dhruva Maharaj also saw Lord Vishnu face to face.
Yes, he did.
So how is it that Dhruva Maharaj became like, so pure, but Daksha still made a sense against Vishnu?
Did you hear the question? It's a good question. Both Daksha and Dhruva saw the Supreme Lord face to face. They went in two different directions afterwards. Why? Dhruva had an intention of pleasing Narada. That is, how one can go from Sakam Bhakti to Nishkam Bhakti, or devotion where there's highly motivated for something material, to the position where there's no more material motivation. The distinction here is that when Dhruva heard from Narada, you should just go back home, you're a little boy. Great sages, they try for lifetimes and don't achieve perfection that you're looking for. When you grow up and you're a little older, you can come back out and try it again. He tested him in various ways. Dhruva said, what you've said is true. It's perfect advice. The problem is, I'm Kshatriya spirited. I want a kingdom. I want to get back at my stepmother. I want a kingdom. So, I can't follow your instructions. Can you please give me some means that I can attain the shelter of Vishnu? You're most qualified. Surely you can do that. So, Narada did that. He saw the determination of Dhruva. He gave him the means. Something changed in Dhruva's heart. He felt very, very, very grateful. It stayed, and that gratitude stayed with him. He circumambulated Narada and went to that place where he had given him Mahavan to perform his practice, the practice and the mantra and everything. Narada completely equipped him. But it wasn't just he did so he could get. He was feeling gratitude to Narada. And those two combined, when Lord, as he was approaching, fixing his mind on Lord Vishnu, together with the gratitude for what he had received, his heart changed. We don't see that same sequence with Daksha. He took something off the shelf so he could get something he wanted. He was very determined. He was also very qualified. But his heart didn't become purified in the same way. Now Lord Vishnu showed his mercy by coming. Just like Lord Vishnu showed his mercy to Indra. There's another. And Indra is still doing the Indra things afterwards. His heart's not fully purified. Because it's more I want without the going beyond the I want stage. The difference specifically with Dhruva was his deep gratitude for his spiritual master and the gift that he had received. We find that same principle in Brihad Bhagavatamrita with Gopal Kumar, where he keeps going to another situation or beyond the material allure because he wants to fulfill that which his spiritual master wanted to give him, and feeling I would be ungrateful if I didn't. He was moved by gratitude. Gratitude is very powerful. And it's not just, good manners and you say please and thank you. It's an inner quality that grows into bhakti. Gratitude is a seed of bhakti. Wanting, another way the seed of bhakti is described by Srila Prabhupada in one purport. It's this sense of, I want to serve. Just like the padasevanam that we discussed on Sunday. I want to do something for Krishna. I receive so much from Krishna. I want to do something for Krishna. Gratitude. From gratitude flows devotional service that's selfless for the other, for the beloved. And that's the stream of consciousness that carried Dhruva beyond his material desire. Okay, I think we'll end there. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.